Today's episode will involve a lot of alliterations, albeit not always on time.
For example, this one's brought to you by the letter C. Cops cook corned beef, cause canaries can't.
See, that's what we bring you on the bus. A lot of the letters A and B.
We bring you on it, we bring it to you. The bus is everywhere. Some people like to call it God. It's another word for the bus.
And we have the steering wheel.
Now, before we take you down a deeper, darker, depthier dungeon of Deuteronomy, let's go ahead and take care of some quick business. The music can only mean one thing, folks. It's the holiday season. It's time to go buy your friends, family, loved ones, work colleagues, sweet darlings, mistresses, whatever the term is for a male mistress, concubines. There's no better place to go get them something than one of our small affiliates, Onnit.com. Go on there and get them some products like such as Alpha Brain, New Mood, Hemp Force Protein, or MCT Oils. These things are going to show those people in your life that you care about their health, wellness, and optimization. And then you can ask them, are they on it? Type in promo code BUSDRIVER, all capital letters, for get yourself a 10% discount. You can also go on our website, onthebuspodcast.com, and do your Amazon shopping through our Amazon portal located at the bottom of our page. Don't go out shopping this holiday season. You can save yourself time, spend so much more time doing whatever it is you do with your family, maybe your sweet, sweet, sweet puppy, cat, turtle, snake. Spend more time with them. Don't do it spending time with a human in an archaic form of shopping in a grocery store that's dirty and disgusting with children sneezing and vomiting all over grocery carts that you're going to be pushing your stuff on. And all that stuff will in turn get passed on to your beautiful, beautiful pets, and then they'll get sick, and then they might die. Save yourself the time. Save yourself the sadness. Shop through our Amazon portal at onthebuspodcast.com. Podcast is also brought to you by Organifi Green Juice Powder. Head over to OrganifiShop.com and buy yourself some green juice powder, other products such as probiotics, or turmeric. Turmeric's an incredible anti-inflammatory. And one more time, that's OrganifiShop.com. Use promo code BUSDRIVER as well and get yourself a 15% discount on your Organifi Green Juice Powder, turmeric, or probiotic substances. Last but not least, this podcast is also brought to you by Gopher Case. The perfect thing to take on the road, whether you're traveling, going to a music festival, or you're just taking a picture at work or school, the Gopher Case is you. It's patented clip-in technology, multi-accessories, Bluetooth stick, a lanyard that clips in and out. There's also several other accessories they're about to come to the market with. So give them a shout on gophercase.com, use promo code ONTHEBUS for a 10% discount, and get you or any of your family friends for the holiday season a Gopher Case. And big shout out to Gopher Case. Thank you so much for providing us with the studio space for this episode. Thank you, Gopher Case, for keeping us on the bus. Now on to today's bus rider. We got Kevin Wong. I met Kevin when I was living in Kuwait. Kevin traveled through Kuwait, and he found me through couch surfing, and I let him stay on my couch while I traveled through. Don't know, wasn't my first person I hosted out in Kuwait, but one of many, many, many people I had coming from all over the world and stayed on my couch in Kuwait. Kevin is currently on a 20-month round-the-world non-stop travel trip. He's currently in Hong Kong, which is where some people would call him a travel hacker, but I actually see him more as a life hacker. This guy's hacking his way through life, finding the ways to, whether it's work and live for free or to trade it with skill value and labor. So, without further ado, the bus is moving. Kevin, get on. Let's do it. Welcome on the bus. Last time I saw you, we were sharing Lebanese food in Kuwait City. And where are you calling from today?
I am in Hong Kong right now. A million miles away in Hong Kong. It's great to be on the show. It's great to talk to you guys. Great to talk to you, Brandon, after over a year, I guess.
It seems like it. And since then, I mean, I think you've been to 50 plus more countries. You've had dengue fever. You've conquered three or four more different continents or even crossed the same continents. What have you been up to since?
Wow, since Kuwait, let's see, I went to Europe, been to Central and South America. I've been all across Asia. I've touched Africa. I went to Morocco for 5 weeks. It's been a crazy journey since I last saw you. I've done so much.
People say get to say they live vicariously through my Facebook posts and my stories, but I was going through yours and your Instagram before this, and I was like, every single one is just an amazing photo, just in a crazy cool location with an amazing story behind it. Because your story is unique. The way you travel is very unique. You know, the way we met, for example, is through couchsurfing. And couchsurfing is a social media platform where people are trying to save money as they go, trying to live and connect with people who live in a city or country, wherever they're traveling to.
Yeah, I mean, couchsurfing is such a great tool. I've met so many really cool people through couchsurfing, and it's one way you really get to know what life is like in a city or a country. And it's not just about saving money, although that's a huge plus.
Now, when you first did couchsurfing, I know even for me, I had a huge bias. First thing I did was in Europe, I was with a bunch of friends, and it was like, we're about to go live in this 63-year-old woman's house. You know, it was actually four buddies, usually on couchsurfing, getting four people approved to go live in a house, all first-time couchsurfers. You don't usually get a go-ahead, but this lady was cool with it. And it's like, okay, we're living in her house. She's cooking us dinner. Her son comes over. He's a traveling musician with a van with a piano built inside. And we're traveling around in his piano van. He's playing music for people all night in Brussels. And I don't think this would have happened even in a hostel. I don't know where the situation could have sprouted up, but it happened through couchsurfing.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally random. I mean, before I did couchsurfing at all, I was a bit skeptical of it. Because you don't know what kind of people you'll meet or who's hosting you. You're living in someone else's house, but all the experiences I've had have been completely amazing. I've had such luck with the couch surfers I've met, especially in the Middle East. The generosity is just incredible.
Do you have any crazy couch surfing stories, though? That one that was just like, this guy had a bit of a screw loose. I locked the door when I went to sleep in that person's house. Or I took everything with me when I left for the day because I don't know about this guy.
No, I mean, well, for the most part, I've trusted everyone. The couch surfing experience I had in Oman just after I met you, Brandon, was a really cool one, though, because the guy, so this was in Oman, and the guy gave me my own apartment for my time there. He took time off work to drive me around. He wouldn't let me pay for anything because the Omani hospitality is that your guests are your guests, so you have to make sure they have a good time. You can't make them feel like they are paying for their time there. So it was such an unreal experience to have such hospitality. I was able to see so much and experience a really cool cultural events with them and his family, and it was just amazing.
I think a lot of people who don't get to travel miss out on that experience. I feel whenever I have a friend or I host someone on couchsurfing, like even when I had you come in, you know, it's like, all right, this guy is getting the representation of how Brandon sees Kuwait. And I want to kick this guy and make sure, you know, he gets to go to Maze Al Ghanem. It's not even a Kuwaiti restaurant, it's Lebanese, but it's the oldest restaurant in Kuwait. I'm going to make sure I take him there. And I want to make sure he knows about this location and this place and that place. If I'm going to have, you know, let me throw a party, you know? Drinking's illegal, but let's get this guy some drinks, let him interact with some other people in the place. And, you know, someone who doesn't get to travel and do those things, they're not as receptive to other people coming into their country and interacting with them and wanting to show them a good time. You maybe see that, you know, Southern hospitality in America, but a lot of that seems like it's missing. People being warm and receptive to strangers, people they don't know, or people that don't look like them when they don't get to experience that for themselves when they go out of the country and travel that way.
Yeah, I think that's a problem with Western, the Western mindset these days in North America and in Europe, is that we fear the unknown, so we're not as receptive as, we're unsure what it's going to be like, so we're too afraid to do it. But I think it's a great way to get to know different cultures and meet new people, and you really learn that everyone's the same around the world. Everyone's out there for the same purpose, to to make money to put food on the table and to support their families and to live their life happily as they can. So, I mean, couchsurfing is a really great way of getting to know the lifestyle of anywhere that you go.
Now, you use couchsurfing a lot. I know you say you have plenty of travel tips, and I want you to share all those with our guests and our listeners. What other travel tips you had besides, you know, possibly getting free room and board that you would with couchsurfing? What's something else you use, like whether it's an application or site?
Well, if you can't couch, so couchsurfing is obviously good for getting free room and board and getting to know the culture. But another way you can do that is a website called Workaway, or there's another one called Willing Workers on Organic Farms. So that's Woofing.
I know Woofing.
And those
for sure.
Two websites, basically, they allow you to live for a period of, you know, a week to a month, whatever, in someone's house or wherever. They'll put you up. They'll usually feed you. And in return, you work, whether it be on a farm, you take care of the kids, you help build a mud hut, like I just did in Morocco, or you help out. You give some sort of physical labor, and in return, they put you up and give you food often. So that's a really cool way to save money.
Yeah, and I think like when you do something like that, it's so mutually beneficial, especially long term, because you get to learn not only how your food is grown in like so many different places and countries, but you get to learn about the connection that different cultures have with their food or with, you know, with whatever experience that you're getting there. I know some. Have you ever done any woofs that are not just growing food, but maybe like building like, because I know there's other ones besides food. So have you done anything else?
Yeah. So the site Workaway is more than just farming. So they do like babysitting kids. They do helping out in a hostel or a hotel. I was just in Morocco building a house out of mud and straw for this Swiss Moroccan couple. We're trying to start up an eco farm. And so I was, you know, getting dirty in the mud and building a house. And that was really cool. It was on a farm which the Moroccan guy's family owned. So I was, you know, the caretakers of the farm were cooking us delicious meals every day. I was really connecting with nature and hearing all the animals and being in the quiet, because Morocco was a crazy place in the cities.
And finding a
but
lot of
that was a really cool place.
I think like the Western, right? In the Western world, they hear, oh, you had to build your own house, or we hear you had to grow your own food, and there's just such a disconnect from that. And then when you actually go and experience it with the people who are gonna live in it the next day, who are gonna eat the food with you together, you gain like so much more gratitude for something like that, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more appreciation for it when you've taken part in it. You know, we buy our houses already made. We buy our food from the supermarket, so we don't really appreciate it. But I think when you do it yourself, there's so much more appreciation and understanding for what goes through, what is gone through to get it.
What would be your coolest job that you've had through Workaway or Woof? Your favorite one, your coolest one?
I haven't done many, but I definitely think this farm work in Morocco was the coolest. It was such a different experience. It wasn't one that I expected to have in Morocco, but I thought it was so cool to help out, to actually get physical and build a house. I thought that was just the coolest thing.
What's special about you is you try and spend only $25 a day. It's the reason why you've been traveling for 20 months straight now. You know, walk me through your fiscal plan. You know, what is it? You know, what is that $25 going towards? And if you, for example, have to spend $25 on a place to stay tonight, you can't find a couch surf, you can't find a Woof or a Workaway, where do your funds go towards?
So usually the bulk of my money budget goes towards accommodation, if I'm not couch surfing. Even places where I probably could find a couch surfing, sometimes I like to stay in a hostel just so I can meet people. Because if you're traveling alone, as I do usually, then you get bored. So it's nice to have someone to talk to go eat dinner with, whatever.
Agreed.
So that's where a lot of it goes. The rest of it would go towards food, transportation. So if I take a bus or a taxi that day, if I have to pay for the entrance fees to a castle or a mosque or something. And otherwise, I use any extra money for beer.
Beer, we'll put that one down. Extra money for beer. Leftover money goes for beer.
You still travel.
It's an important one.
What is the largest expense that you have to fight through, and like
probably airline travel?
Yeah, like the airline. Actual transportation.
Yeah. Airline travel is a huge problem. But I do find really cheap flights. I don't remember if you remember, Brandon, but when I met you in Kuwait, I was there because of a cheap flight. Do you remember that?
Vaguely. I had a bunch of couch surfers come in, and I know I had another guy from Missouri who was using his British Airways credit card and the Avios points thing.
Yeah.
Were you using the Avios as well?
Wasn't that what I used. I do have points that I use, but that particular flight, I had flown from Manila in the Philippines, and I had found a return trip from the Philippines to the Middle East, so Philippines to Kuwait, and then Dubai back to the Philippines, and it was only $25.
Well, you know why it's that cheap, though, right?
Yeah, it was a flight error. So
no, there's a lot of flights like that. I've had a few people from the Philippines come and stay through couch surfing as well.
Yeah,
it's just the amount of workflow that comes in from the Philippines. They have a bunch of migrant workers that come through there, and people come and visit family or going back there for vacation. So they offer cheap deals. Was it Kuwait Airways you got that on, or Fly Dubai?
It was Cebu Pacific, which is Filipino airline.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a flight error, and the airline honored it, so I took advantage of it.
Beautiful. Yeah, I usually get flight errors through this one Twitter handle called The Flight Deal. Everybody get on the Twitter handle The Flight Deal. They offer incredible ones. I think, Blum, you're looking at my phone.
Yeah, there's that one. There's a Facebook page called secretflying.com. Mm.
Yes, Secret Flying.
I think, $183 from London, from New York to Stockholm, you saw?
I just was looking at some of these flights pop up, and I'm in awe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I just flew to Hong Kong from Stockholm. It was about $220 US.
Say that again? 220?
Yeah.
Direct? Or?
Yeah, direct. Oh, well, it was through London, but London direct to Hong Kong on a really good airline as well.
What airline?
Cathay Pacific. It's a British Hong Kong. When Hong Kong was British, it was their airline, and it's got really good customer service and food.
What is your favorite airline you've flown on? What would you say is like you look for a certain one, or you're just going for the deal?
Generally, I just go for the deal, but I'm happy when I get a few airlines. I really like KLM, which is the Dutch airline.
Mm.
The food's so good. Just, I don't even know if the main meals were good, but I remember getting pumpkin pie once, and I was so happy to get pumpkin pie.
Are you meeting people? Like, do you connect with people on the flights and then try to hang out with them in the cities that you're going to? Has that ever happened?
It has happened. I met a French couple on a plane last year, and then just by chance ran into them in town the next day. And then we went for lunch together, and then we did a hike together. That was really cool. But if I can meet people, sometimes my flight to Hong Kong was mostly Hong Kong residents, and I didn't know if they spoke English, so I didn't really approach them. But it is really cool when that works out.
I got
to meet someone on a bus or a flight, and then you can hang out with them.
I got a tip for you on this one. Yoga and stretching in the bathroom on the back of the plane works great. Even picked up a chick that way. Yeah, telling you. Just go yoga, stretching.
He's been praising this strategy for so long. Listen, brother, bro, when you get on the plane, just hit the back, do some yoga and stretching. People will be asking you questions and surrounding you. You will have the girls looking at you in some sort of way.
Yeah. You got the flight attendants looking at you. I remember one from Prague to Dubai. They were just eyeballing me over. Maybe you have a dude or two looking over, but it's like, okay, you're giving him a show too. You're not interested, but hey, you're making everybody happy back there.
So Do you do this in just in the back rows, or do you do it in the back, like, kitchen area?
Yeah, I'll go to the back kitchen area where there's the most space. And, I mean, I need to be stretching on there anyways. It's with my injuries I've had. There's three hernia discs in the neck, one in the back, and the bulging disc in the back.
Ah, shit.
I got to be getting my body moving. So, it's a win-win. Yeah. I'm winning everywhere on this one.
Yeah, sounds great. I might have to try that out.
What do you do to stay healthy on the road? For me, I have a hard time finding greens, for sure, when I'm traveling, the vegetables. Seems like when you're on these farms, you don't have a problem, but you go to a city, for example, let me see, like even when I was in Peru, you know, you'll find bananas, you'll find avocados, you'll find fruit, but some of your more wholesome nutrition, sometimes a little hard to come by, and getting exercise. Do you have a little routine or something you do when you travel?
Yeah, in terms of food, you're completely right. I mean, when I was in Peru and Bolivia, Colombia even, it's so hard to find vegetables. There's a lot of fruit around, which is good. But yeah, the vegetables lack. And I often go for the cheapest food as well when I'm eating out. So that means it's probably unhealthy. The exception, I think, is here in Asia, where I am now. It's a lot of fresh vegetables available. And so that's a relief because, yeah, South America was very unhealthy. Europe, well, I was eating pretty well in Europe, so that was okay. But yeah, food, eating healthy food is a big struggle sometimes. But in terms of exercise, I think I do a lot of exercise when I travel. I love to do hiking, so I'm always hiking. Even here in Hong Kong, I've been hiking the last 3 days, up some small mountains, I guess. So I've been finding ways to keep active when I travel, which is great.
Yeah, I've seen the photos you posted recently. They look amazing. I know Hong Kong, you know, had something like this, but you're telling me in the photo, like, these beautiful scenic mountains or even hills, it's not too far from, you know, the hustle and bustle and the huge metropolis that is Hong Kong.
Yeah, Hong Kong's very surprising, and I think the purpose of my pictures on Instagram while I'm here is going to be showcasing that Hong Kong's more than just the big city that everyone thinks it is. There is beautiful nature here.
Where are you off to next after Hong Kong? Or how long are you there for as well?
I leave on Tuesday. I'm flying to northern Thailand for a few days, I think. And then I'll cross into Laos for a month or so. Not sure exactly.
I was actually kind of curious about it. You were talking about the food and sometimes it's difficult to get good vegetables and good, it's difficult to find some of the things you're looking for. Like, what tips might you offer me? That's what I go for. When I travel, the first thing I want to do is I'm on the local market, or I want to find, some sort of gourmet shop or the hot, what are you using, since I'm sure Yelp isn't prevalent in some of these countries? Like, what do you do to find the food? Do you just find the local market, or like, what's your go-to?
Usually the go-to is the street food markets. I like to try something local, and usually that's what the local people eat, is whatever. So, you know, in Thailand, it'll be pad thai. In Colombia, it'll be like little corn flour pancakes. It depends where you are, of course. But, I mean, sometimes you do get sick of the street food, and then you go to the markets. So the markets have obviously very fresh produce, meat, what have you, and if you buy it from there, you can cook it yourself in the hostel kitchen, and then you can eat healthy. And whenever I do cook in the kitchen at the hostel, it's a lot of vegetables because they're so cheap in South Central America and in Asia. So that's a huge plus of these, I guess, developing countries, is that The produce is very cheap here to buy.
The first time I really traveled international, I went to Panama, Costa Rica, and on the side of the road, I mean, there had just been some kind of tsunami or flood, and on the side of the road, like standing in like mud almost, there's this woman with a grill, and she's got these slabs of meat with homemade guac and pico, and I'm like, I got to eat this. This looks absolutely incredible. So I buy this off the side of the road, and
It was one of the best things I've ever had in my life. And I get home, and then it hits me. Gastroenteritis. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just 5 days in bed of the worst stomach pain that you can imagine. Have you been through the gauntlet like that? Or how do you protect against, or do you take pills, medicine, anything to protect against some of those street food, bad water?
I don't take anything for it. And I was very lucky in Asia. In my 8 months in Asia, I never got sick once. And I thought you develop a bit of a immunity to bacteria by, slowly eating street food and stuff that's not the cleanest, restaurants that aren't the cleanest, what have you. I thought I was good. And then I got to Peru. And Peru, I got ill for about a week. And that was miserable. I mean, it wasn't the worst illness, food sickness that you could have. I wasn't stuck in bed or anything. But I was running to the toilet all the time. Didn't feel great. Didn't have an appetite. And then I got it again in Bolivia under a month later. And it was just the worst.
You didn't get it in the salt flats, did you? That would be a great place to get it.
No, I got it right after the salt flats. So we'd gotten back from our salt flat tour, went to a restaurant, and I think of the 10 of us who ate at the restaurant, half of us got sick.
Jeez, yeah, so straight food, like straight up food poisoning of some kind.
Yeah, I like to pride myself. Yeah. I think I have a third world digestive system, and I haven't had, maybe diarrhea, but nothing where, I've got the cases where both of you had where it's like, I'm stuck in bed for a few days, I'm vomiting my brains out. Luckily, it's just been, good bout of diarrhea. I can take that. It's a pill I can swallow.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you can handle that.
Now, before you became Kevin the Globetrotter, like, did one day you just drop everything and take off and you started this 20-month excursion traveling for $25 a day? Like, how did you start this whole adventure?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's like the thing that people who desire to travel but don't ever end up doing it is like, how do they break the barrier to actually starting that kind of trip?
Yeah, I think that was the hardest part of this all, was leaving, because I had a good job. I worked in finance, steady job. I had great coworkers. It was for great company, but I desired to travel more and see the world while I was young, before I had the adult responsibilities of a family and a house and all that. So I, quitting my job was one of the hardest steps. But once it's done, and it's infinitely easier from there. The exception to that is the day you actually leave, like, when you're driving to the airport and waiting at the gate, that's pretty hard. But once you're gone, I can Skype or message my family and friends whenever I want. I can see their faces anytime, really. That initial step of quitting your job and getting rid of all of your belongings is pretty tough.
Yeah, fear is very often difficult to manage on a lot of different levels. And then when you talk about just dropping all your things and changing your entire life, and I think like the majority of Americans, they really have kind of a desire to do something, but they have this fear, right?
It's fear of comfort. It's fear of losing something that's safe. It's fear of something, and that's what we're all looking for. We talked about, how a lot of us are the same all over the world. We have all these things that draw us together, which is, finding love, finding happiness, and making sure we have a roof over our head at the end of the day, and we have a roof over the head of the people around us that we live with, that we love. And, when you're going to get rid of those things, and maybe, you might have to go someplace tonight in the middle of the Peruvian Amazon, and you might be living in a mud hut, or living in a hut in a village, and there's tarantulas crawling on the floor. It's something you're not used to. It's something you haven't lived in. Your genes, your cells haven't experienced in maybe 1,000 years, 2,000 years, 10,000 years. And now you're reintroducing, your whole physical, mental, emotional psyche to this. And it's a huge shock. But I mean, you went there. You got to get there and experience it. But dropping it at the first notch, it's like, all right, like you said, I'm at the gate. Here we go. Adventure. I have no idea what I'm about to thrust myself into. But at the end of the day, yeah. I mean, you're just so happy you did.
I think it's the fear of the unknown that just drives everyone crazy. Because you don't know what's going to happen. It's the fear of, you know, not really having a routine at all. You know, when you're at home, you have a routine. When you're not, when you're traveling, there's really no routine. Mm-hmm. You don't know what you're doing day to day. And you don't know what'll happen in 5 years. You don't know what'll happen in 2 years. You don't have a job anymore. But of all the people I've met who've quit their jobs to travel, I haven't met anyone who's regretted it. And everyone who's gone home after traveling for 8 months, a year, whatever, has found a job again. And that was my biggest fear, was not being able to find employment or having employers look down on me because I took time off work of my career to travel. But everyone I've met has found employment again. And so I'm not fearful of that anymore. But I understand that this is the huge fear of particularly North Americans, because it's not so common for us to just quit our jobs and leave, whereas it's very common for English people, Australians, Germans, it's very common for them to do it, but not for us.
They also start doing it at a much younger age. That's almost like a rite of passage when you get 18, 19, especially when I've been in Europe. I've noticed the travel age is much younger, for example. But then when I was in South America 2 summers ago, the crowd, you know, is 28, 29, 30, 31. I was like, oh man, this is, it's a much more older crowd. I thought everybody much more younger than me. And I ended up being the youngest as a 25-year-old. So, I mean,
yeah, I think amongst Australians for sure and Europeans, 18, 19, they finish high school and then it is, as you said, a rite of passage for them to go travel the world and then go to university or whatever, because they want to kind of figure out if they know if they're taking the right path in life. Do they really want to go to school to become a doctor? Are they happy to work in a hospital? Whatever. You learn new cultures, new languages, and that helps you make important life decisions. And it's curious why we are, you know, I would never have thought to do this at 18, 19. So it's interesting why we are in North America so you know, afraid of it, I guess. I don't know. It's just not something we do.
But what made you do it, though? Like, what reason made you, like, why are you so different than most Americans or Canadians that you're afraid to go on a drop of a hat? What makes you different?
Well, I did. So when I finished university, when I was 22 or 23, I guess I was 22, I went to Europe for 3 months. And then I kept meeting people who'd quit their jobs. And that gave me the confidence that I could do it if I wanted to, and I had it put the idea in my head, and then I couldn't get the idea out of my head, as they say, the travel bug bit. And then I decided I need to see the world while I'm young, because you know, a lot of people say they'll travel when they're older, but when you retire, you know, who knows what your health situation will be like, your financial situation. You don't know anything about your future. So if you're young and capable of doing it now, then I figured I should do it.
You're infected. You're infected.
I'm seriously infected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You hear so many people who, pretty much I think it's across the board that almost everyone wants to travel, but you're right. A lot of them say, I'll travel when I'm older. I'll travel when I have money. I travel when I have this excuse. I'll travel when I have that.
When I'm 25 years old. I'm not going to have travel this way when I'm 50. Me, maybe. But for most people are not going to travel and have those same experiences at a certain age. I mean, I know you can attest to this, Kevin. When you're out there on the road, you don't see that many, you know, 50-year-olds or 40-year-olds that are out there at that pub with you, going out every night, or on these sometimes these out there excursions. Yes, there are some, but not as many. And like you said, you know,
yeah,
stuff is going to happen down the road, and those responsibilities are going to hit you one day. You know, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you do see the older travelers, which is great, but you know, it's like you said, I'm not going to sleep in an airport when I'm 50 years old. I might, but I wouldn't necessarily want to. I'm not going to take a 24-hour bus when I'm older. There's all these experiences you're not going to be able to take, or physical activities which you might not be able to do when you're older. And you're missing out on that now. And as well, since, you know, I'm not going to put myself through some quite torturous long bus rides, it's going to be a more expensive way of traveling. Hostels as well. Who knows if I'm going to want to stay in a hostel, and then I'm going to have to fork out, you know, $50 to $100 a night for a hotel. So it's not going to be as affordable when you're older. It's a different way of traveling altogether, really.
What is your current country total at? Country and continent count.
So countries total is, so for this trip, I believe it's 52, in total 79 countries, and I've been to every continent now except Antarctica.
Holy hell. Wait, you've been to Australia already?
Yeah.
Or I thought this was your first time.
Yes. That was my, Australia was my first stop, basically, back 20 months ago.
Where'd you go in Australia, that trip?
So I just did the East Coast. So I went to Melbourne, Sydney, and then all the way up to Cairns, which is sort of near the top on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a month. I gave myself a month there because it's quite expensive in Australia. So limited myself to a month. But like I said, I'm moving back now, moving to the West Coast this time, where I can actually make some money. And it'll be a different experience making money in Australia.
Yeah, you're going to Australia with a work visa. Can you go into a little more detail about that?
Yeah, it's a working holiday visa. So I know the Americans can get it as well, a slightly different version of it. But it basically entitles you to live and work or travel in Australia for a year. So you can make as much money as you can, but you can also travel. You can enter and exit Australia as many times as you want. I think it's a great way to do it. I think the age limit is changing to 35 years old as of next year.
Oh, really? It wasn't. I thought it was 18 to 30. They changed it. They raised it, or they lowered it?
Yeah. So it is until 31, but then they're changing it as of next year. But I believe the bill to do that was just passed last week, so it wouldn't be anywhere on mine. But they are changing it to attract more people to do this program.
Awesome. And is there any certain employment that you're going to look or take under your belt when you go out there?
No, you know, I'm leaving it pretty wide open. I could do farm work. I could do restaurant or hotel work. I could find a part-time contract in an office, you know, work for 6 months in an office doing data analysis or working on a phone line. You know, really, I can do whatever I want. So I'm going to get to Australia and start looking and seeing what I want to do.
Hear that, everyone? Kevin has given you ample amount of tips and advice where to find work and where to live abroad. You can get out there now. There's no reason why you can't. This guy's doing it. 20 months. He's going to be answering phones, sitting behind a desk. He's going to be doing it in Australia. And Perth's on the West Coast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be good. Great beaches out there.
The visa's for a year?
Yep, so I'll be starting in January, so I'll have a whole year.
You still got time. You're stopping in Laos next, right?
Sorry?
You're stopping in Laos after Hong Kong, and then you're heading down there?
Yeah, Laos, and then from Laos down to Australia.
What do you travel, like, what is your backpack consist of? What are your travel tools that you...
My backpacks? It's a very small backpack. It's actually carry-on size on the plane. I just basically have two pairs of pants, a hoodie, a sweater, a bunch of t-shirts and underwear, and a really light rain jacket and some socks. That's it.
So you travel light on technology? Do you integrate anything like that? Like,
I have a Chromebook and my phone, obviously. I didn't have the Chromebook until I was home in September, so I'd been traveling with just a smartphone for the rest of the time, and it works fine. It has maps, it has any app I need, it allows me to do whatever I want. So I didn't need a huge computer, laptop. I have a camera, of course, but you don't need that much, really. Once you've gone for a while, you wear the same clothes over again, you do laundry all the time. You don't need everything.
He's a real stoic right there, this guy.
Definitely. I am not one for showers on the road, or, like, you know what I mean? Or minimal is great.
I mean, Honestly, I see people packing so much for a weekend away or a week away. You really don't need that much. Are you really going to wear everything that you're packing? Probably not.
And again, it's show giving you more appreciation to all those little things in your life. Whether it's just like the little ample amount of clothes that you're taking with you. Or I even remember in Bolivia, after we did the Death Road bike excursion, like 65 kilometers down this, I don't know why they let people go down on this mountain anymore on this bike. One guy broke his shoulder.
It was terrifying.
Another yeah. person's cut his whole face up. I cut my hip because the guy who broke his shoulder was right in front of me. And we're literally...
It's a rite of passage. Literally.
You're over the mountain. You're 7,000 feet, I ask. How far down are we at this point? And it's right there. There's no rails. It's pebbles that you're just riding this mountain bike on. Mountain bikes that hundreds and maybe or thousands of people use over the year. Yeah, we're good. Yeah, don't worry about it. And when we got down to the jungle that day, and I took that shower, it was a freezing cold shower because it was the winter time in South America, but it was my favorite shower ever. I survived this mountain. I'm in the middle of this little shack taking a shower right now. Eating just some nice, sweet plantains. And it was like, one of my favorite days. One of my favorite days I had in my life right there. I can always remember that day.
It was so much fun, but it was so terrifying.
What would probably be your favorite excursion, favorite exploration, whether it's, big site that you've always wanted to see or always wanted to do, or, you know, for example, like the Death Road. Where was your favorite excursion you went on?
It's a bit of a weird one, but my favorite thing, I think, was going to Chernobyl, which was that nuclear disaster in Ukraine.
Interesting.
That was so cool to see. It's a deserted town. That famous picture of the Ferris wheel and the bumper cars just standing there, you know, after 30 years. It was so cool to see just an abandoned town.
Were you like, I'm getting radiation right now?
Yeah, I mean, I was worried about that a bit, but apparently it's very safe. We had the Geiger counters or Geiger meters, whatever they're called, and it was. I think I'm okay.
Well, there's a good business
right
there.
But that was really cool.
You have people shoot their semen into cups before they go into the Chernobyl area. That way, I say, hey, you got good semen over here, non-radiated semen. Take it with you on the road.
Literally 2 weeks ago, Ukraine unveiled the largest movable metal structure that goes over the Chernobyl power plant. It's like a dome. So they domed Chernobyl just recently.
To lock in the radiation?
Yeah.
Nuts.
It's bigger than the Statue of Liberty.
Really?
Yeah, heavier than Eiffel Tower.
I saw that being built when I was there in the summer.
Oh.
It was massive.
Yeah, this looks pretty cool. Yeah, that's awesome that you saw that. I wonder if you have any pictures. Holy smokes.
Yeah, definitely. I can send them.
Please yeah, we'd love. Yeah, we'd love to share the.
What's all your biggest failure or demise on the road? Yeah, that place where you just missed the train or you missed a flight, and did it turn into a positive in the end, or was it just like shit, money stolen, computer's gone? Give me a biggest demise story on the road, just to give those pessimists the satisfaction. Like, see, he should have never left his house. He should have never went on the road.
I haven't missed a flight. I was very close to missing a flight just last week, actually. I had to take a very expensive taxi, but it all worked out in the end. I have never had anything stolen either, so I've been very lucky. But I know a lot of people who've had stuff stolen, they've been robbed because they've been careless.
Does this trip ever have an end, man? 20 months in, when's it over?
I don't know. I think that's the good thing. I think that's the best answer. I don't know.
Do you have a steady form of income coming in?
That is the best answer, by the way. I think so.
I was saying before, do you have like a steady form of income coming in? Like, do you do travel photography or do you have a blog? What how do you keep this afloat? I mean, did you have enough money saved up before that, you know, that you have a big enough nest egg to make this $25 a day budget? Yet, you know, you're not always working, I see, when you're on the road.
Yeah, no, I had saved up quite a lot. I had two jobs for a while. I moved home. I had invested in some stocks, so I had enough money to keep it going. But the the money is running out now, so that's why Australia is coming into play. Make some money.
Do you ever miss it? Miss going back home? Miss mom, dad, family, friends, Tim Hortons coffee?
Yeah, Tim Hortons coffee. Yeah, no, I definitely miss all of that quite often. But like I said, I can talk to them pretty much any time, and it's only if I really think about it and sort of feel miserable about it, then I, you know, miss it more. But otherwise, I'm having so much fun out here that you just don't think about sad aspects that often. And I know I can go home whenever I want, so, you know, I'll enjoy it while I enjoy it, and when the time comes, if the time comes that I miss it too much or I long too much for a routine, I can just go home.
I actually think I saw you post something when you were in Dubai after you left Kuwait and you got some Tim Hortons. So globalization for the win again.
Yeah, I was so excited to find Tim Hortons. I don't know if the listeners will know, but us Canadians love Tim Hortons. It's like sort of a mix, more sort of like Starbucks, but it's very Canadian. And I think it's in the northern states as well. But yeah, we're obsessed with it. So I was very excited to see it in the Middle East. It was very unexpected.
It was an amazing thing when I was out there. I have like a favorite burger place, you know, that 2 a.m. burger place. You go or you have a joint. You're like, okay, I'm going to get my sandwich at this place. And I think 2 to 3 months after living in Kuwait, they build one a quarter mile from my house. And I was like, you fucking kidding me? This is it? They're actually doing this? So again, globalization for the win. It's not that bad of a thing.
No, that's great. It's so nice to have something familiar from home every once in a while.
Yeah, globalization, I think it's because of the nationalism that's arisen in the United States that there's kind of this negative outlook on globalism right now, or globalization. That,
in Europe as well.
Yeah, especially after Brexit. And there's this kind of negative view. I'm kind of curious, like, what the political outlook, like, I know when I traveled through Europe and Central America, they are actually a lot more, there was a lot of focus on U.S. politics and kind of Obama was always on TV and when I was in Europe, and they were took keen interest in whatever we did, like much more so than even we did down here. And you're getting to see this perspective from so many different places and different viewpoints and different left-wing and right-wing ideologies in different nations. So can you like enlighten me a little bit on like how people look at that from like how they're looking at like what's going on in the U.S. right now, or politics in general?
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. Election was a huge topic everywhere I've been, you know, even dating back a year when Trump was running for the nominee for the Republicans. I was in the Maldives, I remember, and I was talking to this girl who worked at the hotel I was staying at, and she was going on about how it's crazy that he wanted to impose this ban on Muslims, because that's when that had just happened. And it was just weird to me that I was in the tiniest little country, a set of islands in the middle of the ocean, and people are concerned about that. It's just been the same everywhere. Everyone is just unfortunately laughing at the fact that Donald Trump is going to be the president of the U.S. But people are genuinely concerned because they're worried that their country's political parties or the population will get the sort of fearful mentality that brings on a very nationalist point of view and will become anti-immigrants or refugees. Mm-hmm. But I mean, especially in North America, we all came from another place. Unless you are an indigenous person, I mean, how can you?
And even them, I mean, they came over this many years ago. It was 10,000, 13,000, 15,000. We really don't know the history of this continent, you know, past, you know, 10 to 15,000 years. Who was here even before them? Or were there people here before them? I mean, you look at the different cataclysmic impacts, you know, especially with the Ice Age, how much ice was wiped off across the continent and just scraped away everything. 2 mile high ice sheets. So we really don't know. It's hard. It's you know, people are curious and worried. I remember sitting down with, you know, a lot of Muslim people, you know, my boss, his friends, other Arabic people are just like, is this guy, does he have a chance? Like, is this Trump guy, is he gonna like ban? Like, they were like sitting there a little nervous and worried. And these are just all normal, regular people, you know, no hatred or animosity towards anybody. They love America. They love the United States. I think Kuwait, I don't know if you noticed out there, every single car, like a Crown Victoria, Ford, big SUVs, gasoline's really cheap, but I mean, they're so integrated and westernized. You look at, you know, all the fast food chains and all the American restaurants that are there. It's just Americans and a lot of people in the West just don't think that, they just don't care about what goes on. But I mean, American politics, what our bills and the laws we decide really play such a huge role and impact on the rest of the world. For example, the war on drugs in 1971, when Richard Nixon put that law into place, how many different countries all over the world integrated that law and bill and made it the same within all their countries. So, you know, you see with the legalization of marijuana happening in the United States, in many independent states, you know, are all these countries now, and if the U.S. changed their laws, are they going to have to change their laws as well? Because they enacted them because of the pull and sway the United States had, especially during the Cold War.
Yeah, no. People don't realize the impact or the influence that the U.S. has on the rest of the world. So, you know, the decisions that you guys make in the U.S. impacts the rest of the world all the time. And I don't know if Americans just aren't aware of that, or if they don't necessarily care about it, or if they're uneducated about it. But it's a fact. I mean, every country I've been to, people have been talking about U.S. politics. And some people are very knowledgeable about it, which is surprising because they are from the Netherlands or they're from Spain or wherever. So, you know, it's very interesting how important U.S. politics influences politics in the rest of the world.
Yeah, I think like a lot of Americans are extremely conditioned based on potentially media bias or potential, like the way we're educated as kids is very ethnocentric and very like focused on our own cultural ideologies and viewpoints and not looking at anyone else's. And also the fact that we're such a big country, filled with so many different people, that we don't really need to travel anywhere. Or that's at least the mindset, right? Like, I can go to California or Washington or Colorado, the mountains in Montana, and I can get, or at least we believe that we can get like the entire experience, and it's almost like we're living in a different country or different world. If people even want to do that at all, a lot of people here just want to stay wherever they live, where they grew up. And that helps feed into like that mindset. And then also I think another part of it, and this is maybe my philosophical viewpoint, is that like when you're at the top, and I definitely, the US has been the leading superpower in the world for decades, and when you're at the top, you don't really pay as much attention to what's going on below you, whereas when you're at the bottom, you're constantly looking up and wanting to improve yourself. So I think that sort of philosophical vantage point would be a reason why like the Netherlands or why the Maldives would constantly look at someone, because they don't really have full control of their existence, just because the US has such a stronghold on what happens in the world for trade and politics and everything else. So they need to know because it affects them greatly. Whereas in the US, we're at the top and we decide what happens anyway. So we are much freer and get to experience things on our own. So why do we need to pay attention to what goes on below us?
We've lost just a bit of sight of what happens and what goes on. You know, like you said, people can go, I can go to Montana and I can see a splash and a taste of this. But what about that other person that I'm hearing about in the news? For me, going to live in the Middle East was something I really wanted to do and experience. You know, you're only hearing a certain way about Muslims. Only
negative things, yeah.
I wouldn't even say negative, but it's, again, very biased. You know, what is this lady on Fox News going to really tell me about Muslim people. No, so I started reading some books on some different areas. One really good book is Looming Tower. And then when I got over there and just interacting, living, having conversations, you know, with some people that didn't even speak English, and they're would try to translate the words over, and it's like, oh man, like hamdillah, for example. The definition I got for it, you know, if God's good, you know, I'm good. You know, everything's good because praise God's name. It's like, is that really what he's saying? Or do I just not understand the religion and culture that goes in the development of language? That it's just over and beyond me. And trying to translate that into English, which comes from a romantic language, I think it was the
romance?
Base. Romance? Language, romance?
Romance language,
yeah. Or I don't know, is that just Spanish, French?
I don't think, well,
Italian.
Yeah, that's Spanish, French, Italian. Middle Eastern is Arabic descent.
No, I'm saying English.
English is romance, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
So it's just like coming from two different complete backgrounds, especially when we're talking culture, ideologies, and especially levels of development. You know, Arabic's developed out of the religion of Islam. So it's entrenched in the religion itself. So trying to understand those things and convert them over, it's a mess. As far as a mess is understanding. Love the Arabic language. You don't want to get those people mad. Don't want to get them mad.
Yeah, no, I was just in Morocco for 5 weeks, and they speak Arabic, of course, but they also speak French and Spanish, so I didn't really need to learn Arabic because I speak French and Spanish. But just trying to understand some of the words, it's so complicated.
Do they have any animosity different. Still towards colonialism over there?
Sorry?
Any animosity towards colonialism over there? For example, like Morocco,
no,
former Spanish or French colony?
Yeah, no, there didn't seem to be any animosity in the southern half, I guess, of Morocco. In most of Morocco, they speak French. They learn French in school. The northern, just the little northern tip, speaks Spanish. But there wasn't really any animosity towards colonialism. And to be honest, anywhere else in the world that has been a colony hasn't really shown an animosity towards the country which colonized them.
I think you definitely see that in an older generation person, but not someone who's young in school, like you said, learning Spanish or French or the language that might have been a colonial superpower. The animosity just doesn't show up.
No, I just didn't see it. Which is good. We did the last thing we wanted for conflict.
Well, for example, it's like, I think it's Uganda, for example, and Uganda, Democratic Republic, Congo, these places where there's still civil wars going on, and I think colonialization definitely played a negative impact and still hinders the development of countries like that, where you see these countries that are so rich in resources, natural resources, and so many countries, especially through means of technology, are just so thirsty to try and get a good pipeline and extraction of these resources, especially like for the development of smartphones. And now you see like a country like China just dumping in so much money into development to give to these countries in order to extract these resources. And you're seeing China go through the same colonialization and imperialism that, you know, a lot of Western countries did in the 19th and 20th century. And now people are just getting more upset and more unrest, but you're just seeing like China do the same thing. And it's like, is China out of place? Is China not okay? Like, should we tell them they can't do this, even though, you know, the United States, Western Europe did this for the past 100, 200 years? It's like, is this like the natural route that we take through civilization, through a country advancing through industrial age enterprise?
Yeah, it's interesting to see how China is really going into Africa, and they're really, you know, building up infrastructure. They're opening up a lot of companies and mines,
schools
in Africa,
roads, apartment buildings.
It's completely on the same lines of it's like colonialism, like you said. Except in terms of, you know, a lot of investment in the country.
Even in schools, I mean, they're all learning Chinese in school now.
Or anything.
Now Chinese is the language, like the main language or the second language, secondary language taught in schools. Years here, and I saw a whole piece on Vice. Ni hao. It's all coming to be, man. It's fascinating to see how small the world is, yet we're so different in all these unique little pockets.
Yeah, I know. I think that's one thing I've really learned in my travels. The world is, you know, people are the same, but people are completely different. Countries are completely different. And it's such a fascinating thing to learn about all the different cultures and the ways of life in these countries. It's incredible.
Now, where you've been to so many places. Is there one place that you're just like itching to get to? I know you have to go into Australia to work now, but is there a place you're like, if I could get like a free flight over there right now, I just drop everything. Fuck the visa program. I'm going.
Yeah.
Where's your place?
I think there's two that I really want to get to, one of which is South Africa and the other one's India.
I've done South Africa, yeah. Man, but not India, but it's got to get there.
If you could go, if you had the option of traveling to outer space, would you do it?
For sure. Definitely I would.
Is it?
Why wouldn't you?
Well, I don't know. Maybe
as long as I can come back.
Yeah, well, it's a big if. Space.
Would you have to do it on a $25 a day budget, though? Would you go to space on
Listen, space bucks are in right now.
Yeah, I think I'd have to find a workaway in space.
I know a good couch you can stay on a Venus. Don't worry about it.
That'd be great if you could connect me with the owner.
Listen, Wolf is experimenting with terraforming right now on Mars. They got some good farm programs out there.
Rumor has it. Yeah, definitely. Do you have any, I guess, kind of last tips or tricks or anything you want to share with any of our guests? Like anything that really hits home for you or anything that you would want people to take away when they travel?
I'm saying this from a hostel right now. I think people are afraid, you know, couch surfing I get, maybe people don't want to try, but staying in a hostel is not a scary experience. And I think a lot of people are fearful of hostels, and they save so much money, and you can meet so many really great people. And I would just recommend people just to find a hostel, go on Hostel World and find one, stay there, meet people, and you'll have a really great time.
For sure. Any way that people can reach you, or anyone want any of our guests to follow you, do blog posts, anything that would generate some interest in yourself, Kevin?
Yeah, I've got my Instagram at Kwangaroo, like kangaroo, but Kwangaroo.
We should have let off with that. Kwangaroo.
Yeah, it's a nickname I once had. But yeah, people can follow my story on there. I post a picture a day with a little blurb about what I've done. If they want travel ideas, they can just go through my posts and see where I've been and see what sort of sites they can see there. And yeah, if they have questions at all, never hesitate to message me.
Hey man,
I'll for sure help.
Have you heard of Trover?
No, I've not.
It's a really great travel app. I thought it's a great travel app where you can post photos and it's geocentric, so you post a photo to an area and then people kind of find it. It's a good social interaction, and it's helpful for me. Like, I've been saving up photos, like looking up different areas and see what photos people posted, and kind of,
all right.
Yeah, you can hashtag and like great things like that. It's very useful. And then
yeah, that sounds great.
We also actually have a buddy who's starting something similar to couch surfing called Club Sofa. It's a little more for, I'd say, students connecting, saving bucks while they travel, and staying with, you know, young, yep, like-minded people with a good good message back rate. I know you've experienced that on couch surfing. They have a whole thing like, this person will not message back at all. There's a 50% chance they'll message back. So it's this new new startup called Club Sofa. Definitely give it a check. It's
yeah, it sounds great.
And the guy is he actually is Australian. He should actually be on the podcast. in the next few weeks.
Yeah, we think we're going to have him on in the next few weeks. So take a look, everyone, take all our listeners, Kevin, take a look out for that episode. So that'll be
definitely
very helpful, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Kay Wongura, and thank you so much for coming on. I'm so glad I was still able to connect with you and have you come on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was great to be able to share some of my life story, tips and advice, and it was really great talking to you guys. Yeah, thanks so much.
Dude, too, keep hacking. Good luck on the rest of your trips, and we'll hopefully can run into each other again today, hopefully in Australia.
Yeah, for sure. Come visit.
All right, man. Cheers.
Holy shit. That's it. 10 episodes in the books. Big thanks to Kevin for coming on the show. You can find Kevin on Instagram at kwongeroo, kwongeroo, or Kevin Wong on Facebook. You can also connect with Kevin through his email at kevin.richard.wong@gmail.com. Everybody, make sure to get on the website onthebuspodcast.com, where you can find all the places to find the show. You can also shop to the Amazon portal and see all of our affiliates from Gopher Case, On It, Organifi. It's all there. Big thanks, everybody, for tuning in for 10 episodes. We love you all, but the bus has got to keep moving. Cheers, everybody.
This is the moment for those who...